Scene 13, Sara Vaskovic, 3:30 p.m. A few minutes later, I got up and left, too. I'd met Eunice DeVore oftener than the once or twice I'd admitted to, but I had never taken to her. She was of only slightly more than average height for a woman, 5 feet 5 would be my guess, but she managed to look down from that height. She didn't give me the little fella treatment Roseanne did, and I suppose I could count that on the side of virtue, but she managed to tilt her head just slightly back when she spoke to me, so that her eyes glanced unmistakably downward. A little thing, but I found it irritating. She was also a proto-liberationist. That is, long before women's liberation had become a force in the land, she was fighting her way through the world of men with long fingernails and a reinforced brassiere. She was a lawyer, wore no makeup of any kind, kept her brown hair short, her business suits mannish, her voice harsh, and her stride swinging. When I first met her, I bet myself 12 to 1 she was a lesbian, and I was completely taken aback, right through the wall, when Giles coyly announced that they were getting married. I couldn't conceive what he saw in her, or she in him. Nor did I ever see any inordinate display of affection between them after they were married, any display at all, actually. Nor did I labor particularly to imagine what such a display would be like. He with his hulkish slouch, she with her solid lack of all the qualities I had taught myself to consider feminine. Please! And now, to commiserate with her on a death I had discovered was more than I could easily face. But I had to. Aside from the requirements of common humanity, she was the one who would be most likely to tell me whether Giles had changed his habit, and whether, just possibly, I was wrong to deduce murder from the condition of his clothes. That is, I would check, but I had no fear, absolutely none, of being proved wrong. It is only the huge habits that people change without trouble. Communists can become fascists with a day's notice, and conservatives can crawl into the liberal bed, or vice versa, with scarcely an extra breath between. Men can switch wives, and mousy women can go liberationist, but show me a fellow who squeezes his toothpaste tube with his left hand, and I'll show you a fellow who will never do it with his right hand, except maybe to win a bet, and even then he'll have trouble. But I would ask, the wild game of people is not won on generalities, however sound. I chose the proper bank of elevators to reach the 6th floor and found myself facing an arrow that said offices. I turned left and faced a glass door. I went through it and at once heard little Sarah's clear and precise accented English. I followed it and it led me to room 622. There were 2 rooms, actually, the outer one containing a desk, which presumably should have been occupied by someone who served as buffer, between Sarah and the world. It was vacant at the moment, and I walked into the inner room. I did so slowly and softly, possibly because I did not want to attract Eunice's attention and have to confront her without the maximum possible preparation. I never met a woman who looked less like her name. But that's a purely subjective reaction, for who knows what a Eunice would look like in someone else's imagination. If it were my intention to avoid attracting her attention, however, it was effort wasted, for Eunice was not there. It achieved another purpose, unintended, however, for Sara Vaskovic, I was getting to remember the name, did not hear me. Her back was to me, and she was looking at a series of large cardboard placards. Facing her, one side toward me, was a rather large, stout, white-haired, clearly uneasy man, who did give me a brief glance as I walked in, then lost interest in me at once. I sat down quietly and listened. The only reason for interrupting would have been to ask the whereabouts of Eunice, and I was in no hurry. This might be more interesting. Sarah was saying, "But why 4 makeups on the same subject? Each one features the lobby." She held them up like large playing cards. I could see that there were headlines on top, others, tail lines, I wonder, on bottom, and photographs in the middle. In between, there were wavy lines supposed to indicate print. The details would follow later, I suppose. One of the headlines was "The Lobby Lovely Hotel," which I thought was a phrase to set anyone mewling and puking in his nurse's arms. Another one was "From Lobby to Living, You'll Love It," which seemed only marginally better. I averted my eyes from the other two, so I'll never know what new depths were reached. Sarah said, I've spent the Memorial Day weekend here in the office, but I'm not letting this pass. Why the lobby? Who's interested in lobbies? The lobby is just an extension of the street, air-conditioned in summer and warmed in winter, but that's all. It's always crowded, always busy, always strange and cold. We're selling rooms, beds, closets, windows, dining rooms, ballrooms, conference rooms, every blessed thing but lobbies. And after all our discussions, you come here with four lobbies. The man managed to speak here in what I think he imagined to be an ingratiating tone. I think they got the idea from you, Sarah. When we had that conference, they said you said you could tell a hotel by its lobby. I never said any such thing, said Sarah, staring the man down. I would just like to know who said I did. Exactly who? Find out for me. Just ask and find out exactly who is willing to swear I said that. Even if I had done so, would that be worth four lobby makeups, with not even a single backup in case the lobby idea is sour, which it is? But what are we going to do now? You'll work all night if you have to. If you had had this in last week as you were supposed to... Come on, Sarah, you can't push these things too much. I'm trying to push them enough. Anyway, these are out. Remind everyone there's a recession on, and we can't get by without something good, and these things are putrid. She tossed the placards to the man facing her and sat there unhappily. I couldn't see her face, but if ever a beehive hairdo looked downcast from the back, hers was it. The man got up, gathering the placards together, and said, "Well, I'll call you tomorrow morning, and I think someone's waiting for you." She turned around rapidly, and when she saw who it was, she reddened. I imagine she flushed easily. Her skin was quite fair, almost startlingly so against her dark hair and eyes. Flawless, too, at least the parts I could see. It was a pity she couldn't be stretched out into something taller. She said, "I'm sorry, Darius, I didn't know you were there." The use of the first name caught me by surprise till I remembered we had placed ourselves on a first-name basis on our previous meeting. Actually, I liked the way she pronounced it. I said, "It's all right. It was a pleasure watching you work." She said, "I'm sorry again. I must have sounded petulant to you. They looked like lousy ads to me, weren't they? It's not really my job to backstop design, but they do such stupid things when they're left to themselves. Imagine saying that I said you could judge a hotel from its lobby. You might be able to." "Never. Ours is terrible. It's like Grand Central used to be. There's even a porno newsstand." "Where?" "Well, almost porno, and never mind where. But I'm talking nonsense. I've been kept so busy that I've forgotten what a miserable time you had since I last saw you. I understand that you went up to the room and found your friend dead. I've been thinking you must have been suspecting such a tragedy, or you would not have run off so... For the first time I heard her stumble over an English word. "Distraught." "Distraught," I said. "Distraught. Did you expect to find him dead?" "No, never, anything but that. Your remarks had just put it into my head that I had promised to run an errand for him, and I had forgotten. By the time I got to his room..." "He was dead," she said. "I hope there was no connection." "I don't see how that could be," I said gruffly, but she had put her finger very efficiently on my particularly howling worry. "Did you tell anyone that I had run off like that?" "Oh, no," she said. "I thought you might be in trouble, and it was not my wish to make that trouble worse. Of course, if I had been asked directly, I couldn't very well have lied about it." She smiled, something I hadn't seen her do before, and she had nice, even teeth, front teeth anyway. "I come from a land, you see, where you quickly learn not to volunteer information. Still, there are many around us who saw you run off." "I know, but you're the only one who knew exactly what you said to me that made me run off. And talking about Giles, I understand his wife was here in this room and that she wants to see me."
"Yes, but how did you know that?"
"Ah," and I smiled too, something it was a relief to be able to do. "But you see, I don't volunteer information either."
"But I asked you. It's not a matter of volunteering."
"Does it matter that you do not know?"
"It always matters for a woman not to know."
"Sexist nonsense," I said, and rejoiced, and by no means for the first time, at the weapon the liberation movement had handed over to the occasional male chauvinist. "I repeat, I'm a feminist most of the time."
"Very well, then," she said, coming dangerously close to a pout. Yes, Mrs. DeVore did say that she would like to see you. She's a very strange woman. Do you know her well?
No.
Do you like her?
No.
She seemed so in charge of herself, even though her husband was lying dead upstairs. Her voice did not tremble, her hands were quite steady. I'm told she didn't even wince at the news. I said, she's a successful career woman who has schooled herself to take things as they come. She's forged her way through a male society before the liberation movement came to help, and that takes guts. I thought you said you didn't like her.
I don't, but in some ways I admire her. Where is she?
She's upstairs, waiting in the room for the medical examiner in 1511.
I looked at my watch. It was edging past 3:40, not yet 24 hours since I had arrived at the convention.
When the hell will he come? I muttered. There are many,
I know, many bodies waiting. But you'd think they'd want to autopsy fresh meat. She winced, and I said, I'm sorry, that was a foul thing to say. It's just that I'm feeling tired and bitter.
I understand.
I made a little quasi-salute gesture and left.